This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Thanks.
We're so glad you're here.
Thank you.
So we're just going to kick it off. Like, you know, when Michelle reached out and gave me your contact information, I was like, all right, well, you know, I know you've done a lot of events with Fresh Start and... just wanted to ask, you know, what drew you to want to come speak with us this afternoon?
Well, when I got a call and they told me it was for prostate cancer, I have five of my closest friends, five, that have all had prostate cancer and they've all had the surgery. Like five of my closest buddies. And all of them have dealt with it in different ways. One of my buddies, he literally, when he was diagnosed, got his prostate taken out 30 days later, like as soon as he could get it out, he got it out. He was just so scared. And, you know, and you know, when you're, and it's your friend, you know, I want to know everything about it because I'm about to be 60 in April. So, you know, I'm in that age, right, that it could become knocking at my, I'm not going to speak it into existence. But so, of course, I'm asking every question possible because I want to know all about it. So I think I believe I'm here today really to gain more understanding and awareness because I think it's my duty to get this information out to as many of my athlete buddies, my entertainer buddies, my golf buddies, because it's amazing how many people don't go to the hospital. Like, as an athlete, we always had to go every year to the doctor. One of my buddies who, he watched his for 3 years, he hadn't been to the doctor in 9 years. 9 years hadn't been to the doctor, which was unheard of to me. So, I think really the good Lord has called me to come here today, and we'll see how it goes going forward.
Well, we're glad that you're here. And you know, prostate cancer, as we've talked about, is just so common among men and even more common among African-American men. So I think your presence here, the message of reaching out, you all are the foot soldiers to go back and spread the message, spread the word, talk to your doctor. It's not taboo. It's I think men's health, I think it takes a very different form than the health of others. So I think really to focus in on that. You know, I think as we talk about your career and everything that you've kind of been through, I know you were part of that worst to first team for the you know, in your history, and how do you handle situations where you know, you're kind of labeled in that category and digging in and finding the strength to actually see yourself in a different fashion and kind of go from worst to first?
Well, that 1991 season, I don't know how many baseball fans we have here, but the Atlanta Braves in the 80s were like the walking mat of the National League. But in the minor leagues, I was drafted in 1985. Ron Gant was 83. Lemke is 83. Jeff Blauser is 84. Any of you Braves fans would know these names. John Smoltz, Glavin was 84. John Smoltz came in 88. So what was going on is when we're in the minor leagues, coming up, the Braves just did a great job of drafting, like, quality young guys. And here we're all of us playing together in the minor leagues and winning. Like, we were winning in the minors, even though the Braves were a terrible team. 1989, we win the Governor's Cup in AAA. That's the championship. And I remember celebrating on the field, y'all, with our manager, Jim Beacham, who would later become one of our coaches on our major league staff. And I remember jumping up and down with Beach going, hey, Beach, we can do this in the big leagues. We can do this in the big leagues. 2 years later, y'all, August of 1991, we have captured America. We go from 3,000 fans to 50,000 fans in Atlanta. It's the Tomahawk Chops. It was the most unbelievable experience. And I think we got there because of that brotherhood that we built in the minor leagues together. And you know, you got to have a genuine love for your teammates. You have to have a genuine love for their success. Because baseball is a tough sport, a lot of ups and downs. And there's times in which your teammates need you. You know, when you 0 for 25, you need a teammate to come hug you. You know, we need to go out to a late night dinner or something to talk because that's a stressful situation. So I think, I don't know if that really answers that question, but 1991, I think, you know, we had the mindset, we were young. Just to expound a little bit more, you know, in 1991, we beat the Dodgers. the Dodgers had a veteran laden. Oh, yeah, well, this is going to get even better. I got good Dodgers stuff. But, you know, the Dodgers were veterans. Okay, so all you Dodger fans, so Earl Hershiser, they had Darryl Strawberry, Eric Davis. I think Kirk Gibson might have still been there. But, and then we were a bunch of babies in Atlanta. So as we're fighting the Dodgers in September, you know, all the papers are coming to my locker. I'm just my second year in the big leagues. And they're like, hey, you know, you guys are young. The Dodgers have all this experience. You know, how are you guys going to overcome them? And I remember we were looking at each other, us young guys. We were like, if the Dodgers beat us, it's not going to be because of our lack of experience. We're not scared. Like, we truly believe we can win because of this, told you, this brotherhood. And we just won in AAA at 89.
I love that, believing in yourself.
Yeah, we believe we could do it. And then we ended up, if you all remember, 1991 came down to the last game of the season. We had the Houston Astros in Atlanta. They had 1 foot in the car and 1 foot on the field. They ready to go home. That's what we call teams that ain't going to the playoffs. That last game, they ready to go home. But the Dodgers always have the Giants. And you all know that rivalry. And if the Giants can't make it, they're not going to let the Dodgers make it. And the Giants beat the Dodgers on that final game. And we beat Houston. And we went to the playoffs.
It's amazing. It's such an incredible story. You know, and I think believing in yourself when nobody else does, I think is really a really fantastic, you know, message to kind of find that strength inside to be like, no, we got this, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. You know, I think you've been through a lot throughout your career, and maybe you can speak a little bit to that, like, mental resilience that you need when different things are coming at you. You're faced with a lot of challenges. You're faced with injury. Your body may be changing. How do you have the mental resilience to kind of continue to pick it back up, put your foot forward? Like, yeah. I'm going to come back even stronger than I was before.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of injuries in my career. And, you know, everyone has their journey. And that's the one negative of my career is the amount of injuries. And I've always been the glass half full guy, I'm telling you. Like, in 1996, I only played 6 weeks of the season. I hurt my shoulder. We're coming off our World Series championship where I hit the home run to win the World Series, in case y'all don't remember that, in 1995. In case y'all was in somewhere and didn't happen to watch TV that night. We won the World Series, 1-0. So the next year, in 96, I hurt my shoulder 6 weeks in. Season-ending injury, you guys. And it's terrible for me, you know, because I'm a big part of our team. And but sometimes the Lord sits you down so he can let somebody else rise. A young Jermaine Dye came up to take my place. And, you know, I could have been one of them athletes like, hey, he's taking my place. I ain't helping him with nothing, you know. No, I embraced him because I was one of the leaders of our team, and I know he's going to play my position, but I need to bring him in the right way. And his dad would later thank me for how I treated his son. But that's just how I was raised. My mama raised me like that. But it was an opportunity for Jermaine Dye. Because if I don't get hurt in 96, Jermaine Dye doesn't come to the big leagues in 96. And he may have never come to the big leagues. So as an athlete, because no matter, I coached my son and both my boys who had the athletic gene, played football. And, you know, my youngest son, I remember, we won the Little League Championship in Poway here. But it was one of the games, my youngest son was a hell of a baseball player, y'all. But he gets out his last at bat. And we're on our way home, and I'm driving. He's in the back seat. He's 12 years old. And he's a little misty-eyed, right? And you know, he had a great game. He had 2 hits, but he got out his last at bat. So I'm like, son, what's wrong? And he starts complaining about that last at-bat. And I said, son, let me share something with you. And I'll share this with you all. I said, as long as you play a sport, you're going to have days in which you get your butt handed to you. Okay? I said, that's just part of being an athlete. I said, you got to understand something. God can't shine on you every time. He got to shine on the pitcher sometimes. The pitcher got a mama, daddy, grandmama might be coming to the first game. Auntie just flew in. Little Johnny finally got you out. I said, he can't shine on you all the time, son. I said, but think about all the other times you hitting them home runs. Look how much shining God is putting on you. So I see him start to smile, right? And it's so funny because as he progressed as a heck of a football player, we would have these moments like that when his confidence is a little shaken. And I would say, hey, son, remember what I told you? God can't shine on you all the time. We was playing football this time. I said, God got to shine. He shined on them cornerbacks. Now he was a wide receiver. You know what I mean? If you don't get a catch, God's shining on the cornerbacks today. So baseball is one of those sports, you guys, where there's so much failure. You all know a 300 hitter is a great hitter, but that means he got out seven times. Seven out of 10 times, you are walking back to the dugout. So if you can't rationalize failure, you have a hard time being a baseball player. And I used to look at the greatest hitters. You can think of whoever your greatest hitter of all time, you think at some point during the season, he will have a slump at some point. The great ones have maybe one slump. The average dudes might have three or four. But the great ones are going to have a slump. And I used to joke whenever I got in the slump. I remember one time we were in Kansas City, y'all. We are beating Kansas City 14-2. I'm with the Cleveland Indians. We are killing them. I'm the only guy in the lineup with no hit. Listen, when I get out, y'all, and come back to the dugout, I'm yelling to the pitcher, don't worry, I'll be back and got eight more guys you got to go through. But I will be back up to help you out. The whole team is laughing. You know what I mean? We're going to be here all night if nobody makes an out. So I'll be back in a minute. But I used to look at a slump like, I know it's coming at some point, but when it comes, I embraced it like a cousin, a family member that come to town. Y'all know, get a family come down, you hope they only be there for 3 days, you know, and they going back. That's how I used to look at a slump. Like, let me do the little things I need to do to get out of the slump. But it's coming. So I always feel like the ability to rationalize failure and accept it is very important. And I'll give you one other thing. In baseball, Dodger fans, so you guys understand this. Dodgers is absolutely, they're the best team at baseball right now. They are pushing all the buttons. I got nothing but respect for them. I love watching them play, and I'm brave heart to heart, but I love watching the Dodgers play. Dave Roberts, you know, I like my little brother, you know, came up with Cleveland Indians. I used to drive him in my passenger seat in my Porsche in spring training. Come on, D-Rob, get on there in the car, Rook. And now he's a great manager, you know. And the Dodgers, so I tell people all the time, you know, you play 162 regular season games. If you win 100 games, you most definitely going to be in the playoffs. Your Dodgers won 93 games this year. They lost. But that means they lost 69. They won 93, lost 69. Now, let's apply that to life. Okay? Live your life like a baseball player. I'm trying to go 162 in my life. That means I'm trying to get as many wins as I can, and I know I got 62 losses over here, but I'm going to be a champion. I'm going to the playoffs. The point of that is we got to accept the fact sometimes, y'all, that we're going to have tough days. You know, we just got to accept that. That's part of life. And that's all of us. That's everybody in this room. I'm just trying to have less than you. You trying to have less than Raina. Raina trying to have less than you. You know what I mean? The goal is to stack as many good days. Let's get 100 wins.
I love that.
But you're still gonna lose 62.
I love that so much because when you're at the top of the mountain, you need to have a plan for how you're gonna handle adversity when you're in the valley. You're gonna need to have a plan because when you're in the valley, your mind is like not working right. Like you're not gonna make great decisions when you're in the valley. So when you're at the top of the mountain, you need a plan for how you're gonna handle adversity. It's like you have a friend or a partner or whatever, you're gonna argue with them, whatever. When you're in the midst of the argument, you're like, well, I did this right and you did this wrong, and you did that right and you did this wrong. But it's hard to get to a solution when you're both in that like negative argument. But if before you ever got in the valley, and you're having your good old times, you say, you know what, when we do get in the valley, let's make a pact with ourselves. Let's decide that it's not gonna be me against you, it's gonna be us against the problem, and let's decide it's not gonna be if I win or you win, let's decide that it's gonna be on we're going to resolve the problem. And we're going to decide that when we're at the top of the mountain. Because when we get to the valley, we're not going to be able to make that decision. Rather, when you're in like, right? So I love what you said about, you know, the slump is coming. You know you're going to get in that like negative position. And you're going to have a mindset of, this is what I'm going to do. This is going to be my tactic. I'm going to try to handle this. So that, I think, is really a nice, strong message. I love that, you know. I love you mentoring up and coaching up your son. That's awesome. This room is filled with patients and caregivers, loved ones, partners that support everybody in a different kind of way. So maybe you could speak a little bit to that, to the role models in your life, the people that have helped you, and what the role of the caregiver is in, you know, somebody's journey here who may have prostate cancer.
Okay, so like I told you, my friends, five of them, have gone through the surgery. And my buddy that, he watched it for 3 years. I swear, like, I'm his partner, so I'm always staying in touch because I can understand the mental stress that must have. I mean, it's easy to sit here and say what I would do if I had prostate cancer, right? Because I don't have it. But I can totally understand the level of stress that must come upon a person when they first hear it. I literally was talking 2 days ago, one of my buddies who I told him I was coming here. He was going to show up, but then he'd be trying to sit right here and talk to, and I couldn't bring him. But next time, you know what I mean? But he ran down the whole prostate cancer from day one it was fascinating to listen to him in his journey. So, you know, as a caregiver or a friend, the whole key is trying to remember that we really only have today. I'll take it back to baseball. Y'all, I've been in slumps where I was 4 for 40. Like, you know, and when I think of that, it's almost impossible to go 4 for 40. But there I was. Well, the next game, you can't go in there saying I'm 4 for 40. You got to go into the game saying I'm 0 for 0. I'm just going to play today's game. See, if I go 2 hits, 2 for 4 today, shoot, I'm 2 for 4. I ain't thinking about the 4 for 40. I can't do nothing about that. So when you apply that to life, same type of thing. When you're dealing with a stress or an issue or something, you know, serious like this, you have to, I call it, you have to have a mantra, you know, win the day. And not, guys, 2019, I'm at opening day with the Atlanta Braves. I'm in a fraternity, and I call my fraternity brothers to come hang out. Go hang out in the Braves suite, you know, all the good stuff. I'm gonna have them come down and enjoy it. We have a great time. 2 days later, he calls me. Hey, I went to the doctor. He says, they found a mass in my colon. Now, I had already had a buddy of mine at age 44 die of colon cancer. So when he said it, I think I heard him right. And I said, what you mean? He said, yeah, they're talking about some kind of stage 4. And I am sitting there, y'all, on the other end of that line. And this is my boy. I love this dude. And of course, he got the diagnosis. They told him 6 to 8 months if he doesn't do chemo, 2 years if he does chemo and beyond, whatever. So, I mean, I couldn't imagine getting that information. But I remember talking to him, and I'm like, listen, okay, bro, we're going to take it one day at a time. Our mantra is going to be win the day. Let's win the day, all right? And so I would call him. That first week, I called him every day. Hey, let's win the day. I'm in there with you, man. Let's win the day. Something funny, just get his mind off of it. You know, you got to, because it's, I can imagine, God, just how your mind, when they give you that kind of news. So I say, like, it's so important for us when it's our loved ones to understand how psychologically it could be really wrecking them, but try your best to keep them focused on today, the next hour. Let's win the next hour. And then we get there, let's win the next hour. Because all of us, we all know, we stay thinking about the past or the future. Right, a lot of us. Me too. I'll raise my hand. I find myself dwelling on the past that I can't do nothing about, and then worrying about the future instead of focusing on what's right here today in front of me. So, that was my experience. Well, my buddy, he passed away. He was 8 months. 8 months. He lasted with the chemo, and again, It was so. What that did, even though this is prostate, that had me on my quest as I'm the colonoscopy guy amongst my friends. Swear to God, y'all. Y'all remember Kid and Play? Anybody remember Kid and Play? Yeah, thank you. Kid is my man. I call Kid. He's 2 years older than me. Kid, you ever had a colonoscopy? No, I ain't been to the doctor in 5 years. I'm going to call you every day until you go to the doctor, bro. Every day. He went to the doctor. He went. He was clean. He good. I got another buddy of mine did the same thing, too. He had polyps. He thanks me like I saved his life. His polyps were benign. He was fine, but he's thanking me all the time like I saved his life. But the point is, y'all, and you said it definitely in our communities, this is a serious thing. The prostate and colon as well are serious things. And so many of us do not go to the doctor. So I'm on the quest. I'll meet somebody for the first time. We got a cigar crew, guys. So all of a sudden, some new guy will come. If he looks like he's up around my age, I'm, my man, you had your colonoscopy yet? I know we just met 5 minutes ago, but let's get to the important stuff first. We can get a drink in a minute, a cigar, but let's talk life real quick.
So I love that.
It's important, y'all, and I'm telling y'all, whether you want me to or not, I'm gonna continue raising the awareness on the colonoscopy stuff and the prostate stuff too.
Dr. Carruthers here. He's a gastroenterologist. He does most of his work is on colon cancer screening. So this is awesome. Maybe one final parting word, and then I do want to open it up for a couple of questions from the crowd. Any final kind of messages for this group of men, caregivers that have prostate cancer, kind of final message?
Well, caregivers, just know that you are appreciated. You know what I mean? You are appreciated. You know, that's a solid level of humanity that you have to want to really care for somebody and see them, you know, in a better position. So continue success in that, you know, and no, that's all of us to up our humanity with each other, you know what I mean, look out for each other. For those of you that have the cancer or you're dealing with some form of it right now, again, let's win the day. Just win the day. If we win the day, now let's go tackle tomorrow. And let's stack how many days we can put. We're going to win 100 now, remember. But it's going to be some days it's going to feel like we lost. Just take the loss that day. And get ready to win the next day. That would be my message.
I love that. Isn't that awesome? All right. We got a couple of questions here. This is Darnell. He's actually visiting us all the way from Virginia. Has a very amazing story to share. Darnell, your first question.
Hello, Mr. Justice. Thank you for coming. First of all, I'd like to let you know that I am a cancer survivor, 14 years. Prostate cancer, had it radically removed. And so one of the things I want to ask you is, when it comes to African-American men, we're at high risk. Twice as likely being in the color, twice as likely being in the military, and then the environments and stuff we work in with the carcinogenics and things of that nature. One of the things we have a problem with is trust, T-R-U-S-T, being able to trust the doctors, being able to trust what's being said in our communities, from a faith-based community, you know, we want to listen to our leaders. But how do you deal with that trust and breaking down the barriers? Because I'm like you. Everywhere I go, I try to pass the word on. And so I wrote a book I want to give to you at the end on peeling back the onion on prostate cancer as a thank you for your work in the area.
Yeah, so I agree with you a lot. I'm telling you, there's so many guys I know that don't go to the doctor, which I just makes no sense to me. But I just think you just have to stay on your friends, and also too, we have to rely on our friends to help us. Sometimes we won't even ask our friends, you know, simple stuff like, hey, who's the best doctor that you know of that handles prostate cancer?
Right.
Or, you know what I mean? Start asking people. I say it all the time. Just like in sports, there's Hall of Famers. There's Hall of Famers in the prostate world. There's Hall of Famers in the colon world. There's Hall of Fame doctors out here. In baseball, you get your shoulder messed up, you're going to see Dr. Job. He must be the Hall of Fame guy, right?
Yes, sir.
So there's these guys. They exist. You just got to ask around. Go ask your partners, man. Who's everybody going to? you know what I mean, with this situation. They'll give you a list of people, and now you're in the right direction that you can go to some people that you can trust because so many people have given their trust to these individuals.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, any other? Dr. Kane.
Thank you. David, if I can call you that, Mr. Justice, thank you so David, much for coming. David. You're inspiring everybody. I'm a huge baseball fan, so the highlight reel of your career is just spinning through my head right now. And the great teammates that you played with. And so I'm just curious, a couple things. I'm an Oakland A's fan, and I grew up in the Bay Area, Oakland Hills, went to school there and stuff. And so the Raiders, the A's, the Warriors were my teams. Now, sadly, it's the Sacramento, soon to be Las Vegas A's. All my teams have moved. So, you know, I'm suffering. But you're inspirational. And, you know, every day I'm going to try to do better.
Here. Go.
But when you came to the A's at the end of your career, that was really nicely reflected in the movie Moneyball. You made a big difference. You were the veteran presence of what became a really special, unexpectedly special team, the streak. Everybody knows the story. So they depicted you in that movie as having a relationship with Billy Beane. What was your process in that movie? Did they ask, you know, how that was? How many conversations?
How many people saw Moneyball?
How realistic?
Okay.
How realistic was that depiction?
The Lord didn't call me today to burst y'all bubble on this movie, I don't think. However, okay, first of all, not one of my scenes actually happened. No team is so cheap that you got to pay for a soda. Billy Beane didn't come into the batting cage to say to me that I got to come on board, and they paying me seven, whatever they said. Yeah. And I would never talk to a general manager or a coach like that. My mama would kill me if I ever did something like that. I would never do that. I was the leader of that team, y'all, the first day of spring training. This is my last year in the big leagues. I'm 35 at the time, about to be 36. Some of these dudes were like 23, 22. They grew up watching me. Yeah. So I come in already, 6 World Series, all my personal accolades. They're like, our leader is here. And I walked in like, yes, I am. Let's go, you know? And they reminded me of the young Braves. We had the young pitchers, Mark Mulder, Barry Zito, and Tim Hudson. That's Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz right there. I mean, we had Miguel Tejada won the MVP that year. I mean, and then we won 20 games. We set a record, 20 games in a row. I played on great Braves teams, Cleveland Indian teams, the Yankees, never won 20 in a row. So we break the record.
Awesome.
So here I am. I'm a leader. I call a team meeting, y'all. We are in Minnesota. We done 120. And I feel like I need to let these young guys understand what they've accomplished. Not only understand it, but look at themselves like a team that can win the World Series. All right? So I call it a players-only meeting. I get up, guys, I play with the Braves. You know all of them. We never won 20. I go down all the teams. I start naming Jeter and all the guys, all the great players I played with. None of us ever won 20. But we have won 20. That's how I want y'all to see yourselves. One of the best speeches I ever gave, y'all. I'm telling you, I won one of the best speeches ever. We went out that night and lost. We come in after the game, and they like, DJ, how you gonna talk to us? I'm like, I thought y'all took good direction around here. That was one of the best speeches I ever gave, and y'all done messed it up. But that was so funny, I'll never forget that. But the movie, I'll tell you this about the movie. First of all, Art Howe is one of the nicest managers known to mankind. I thought they depicted him wrong. And here's the bubble that's gonna get burst. You all saw the movie. Large part of the movie is the relationship between Brad Pitt and his daughter, right? Big part of the movie. Getting in the music store, looking at guitars, all that. The movie even ends with him listening to her song. Remember that, guys? We're at the premiere. I see Billy. You know, I was literally like the assistant GM on the team because Billy and I talked all the time because I'm the veteran. So I see Billy. I thought Billy and I had become really close. I'm like, Billy, dude, how you gonna not tell me that your daughter can sing and play an instrument like that? And Billy goes, DJ, my daughter don't sing or play an instrument. There's your Moneyball movie. So next time you watch it, just know that girl singing and all that, she don't even do that for real. There it is, right there. So Thanks for the question on Moneyball.
Thank you, Chris. Paul.
David,
that'll be the final.
I think you might have it wrong. We're not Dodger fans here.
the whole room.
No, most of us are probably Padre fans.
Okay.
And do you have any Tony Gwynn stories?
I absolutely do.
You remember him, don't
you? I got one. So when we go play a team, you guys, we're all in there and we go over team meeting, all right? So Raina will come up, right? And they'll say, okay, hard in, soft away. She'll chase high fastballs with two strikes. Got it, okay? Now we're going down to Padres team. We get the Tony Gwynn. And our pitching coach goes, okay, throw it down the middle and hope he confuses himself, okay? Because he don't know if you want to pull it or hit it the other way. So just throw it up middle, and that's literally, everybody would laugh like you just did, and we go to the next player. We go, that's it. Because if you throw him inside, he going to come down to me in right field. You throw him away, he was just an unbelievable great hitter. I mean, it was amazing. It can't be that easy. But that used to be so funny, and it got so funny that whenever we played, when we were in those meetings against the Padres, we all know what's coming. As soon as they get to Tony Gwynn. And then they'll get to it. Throw it down the middle, hope he confuses himself.
Well, this has been absolutely amazing having you, David, speak with us, share your stories, messages of hope, your time in the game. It's just been awesome. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
For all of you all listening.
Thank you.
It's really amazing.
All right.
Stand up and clap for you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.